My immortality is the life I live now. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. My immortality is the life I live now. We think that immortality means to live beyond death, to live beyond the experience that we call this dimension of life. Well, immortality means living eternally, living without stop. Being immortal means to have a life that continues regardless of whether you appear to be there or not. Say some people's immortality is the gift that they left to the world of their literature, their books, or their monuments, or the lives that they have helped or saved or blessed along the way. And that truly is not our immortality. Our immortality is our immortal life, and it is the life we live right now. And why do I say this? Why do I say this? Why am I talking so absolutely contradictory to the word immortality as it's defined by many people? I mean, it's ludicrous for me to say such a stupid thing like that. Well, we have awakened. First, we were awake. Then we went to sleep, and now we have awakened again. First, we knew that all time is now. Then we went to sleep, and we thought there was a past and a future and a present. And now we've awakened again to the idea and the realization that all time is now, that the only time that there is now. So if the only time there is now, then whatever is now. Whatever is a manifest form of an idea or a concept exists right now. So when we say, my immortality is the life I live now, we can be sure that that's correct, because that is a life that we are living forever. Because immortality means never ending. Now, does the now ever end? The now is eternal. The now is everlasting. The now is immortal. The now is our immortality. So, you see, when we begin to look at life and look at words and look at the game we're playing as human beings, because this is just a human game, because in the absolute and eternal quality of all, it's a joke, you know. I mean, like, who wants to play beginning chess when you are a chess master, you know? You don't have the capacity to go back and play a beginning chess when you are a chess master. You can't play stupid chess, because when you make a stupid mistake, it ends up being a brilliant mistake. It ends up being something that you had in your mind, the depth of your mind that you didn't realize you had, and you might have not played it because it was a little bit way out, but you're trying to be stupid and trying to lose, and by the very fact you try, you win. Because you do the very utterly inconceivable thing, which turns out to be the very point that wins the absolute awareness. You know. So, my immortality is the life I live now. And we want to know, what life do we live now? Well, the life that we live now is the life that I'm working on, getting ready for sharing with you more completely. I sent out the first draft of ideas on being a monk, you know, what it means to be a monk. And this morning I went through that draft and I crossed out half of it and changed the other half. So the next time it comes to your attention, it will be the same thing but different. It'll be more precise. And instead of saying what a monk doesn't do, it only says what a monk does do, you know. And you say, well, I could have told you were going to find that point. I could have told you'd get around to that point and not say what a monk doesn't do. But that's what that trouble is. How do we describe perfection except by comparing it to imperfection? Well, if you see something perfect, then what does perfect mean? How does it have any relativeness, you know, and of course that's the word too, relativeness. In absolute, there is no perfection. Because nothing is more wonderful or less wonderful than its absolute self. And living in the now, what we are doing, we are becoming more and more aware of our perfect self. We're becoming more and more aware of the ideal concept that we are, which has no perfect or imperfect about it. It's an allness, an isness, and you know, right now that's sort of a joke in your mind and your thought as you're thinking about it, saying, how do you talk about that? How do you describe those things? How do you even give it the time of day? But you don't right now. And you see, but we're working on it. And what we're working on is we're coming to the realization of the idea that we are a master pianist, and we have no idea how we got there. Oh, we remember our struggling years, but we don't really remember the struggling year. All we remember is the things that we couldn't do that we wanted to do. We had to stay practicing the piano, couldn't go playing baseball, we couldn't go out with the kids, and couldn't do other things. You know. And you're going to be a ballerina, and your mom says, okay, you go do what the teacher says at school, the ballerina teacher, and if she says you do this, you do it, and I don't care if you do it, it's because you want to be a ballerina. If you don't want to be a ballerina, doesn't bother me at all. I don't mind having you just as a wonderful daughter, you know, that's nice too, you know, but if you want to be a ballerina, you know it's going to take a little bit of effort to train yourself to be that perfect one. Now she is the diva, she is the ballerina supreme, and she's dancing on stage, and she's doing Swan Lake, and she's doing all these other very lovely dances, very, very special dances that take skill beyond the finest of the finest, because she's a diva. She is the ultimate. But she does it with such rhythm and grace. Her body is one fluid movement. It didn't get that way because she didn't practice. It got that way because in her mind, she practiced seeing herself doing that. And her physical body just went along with the game. But in her mind, she saw herself doing it. It wasn't the physical practice that did it. The physical practice merely helped to tell her mind that she could do it. Because once the mind has captured the concept that it can do the dance of the diva, the diva's body is no longer in existence. The diva's body is the fluid motion of the mind at work. The master chessman, the master pianist, the master sculptor, the master writer, the master dancer, the master anything, is a master because they do not think of their craft. They are their craft. They are the dance. They are the book. They are the stories, you know. Now, some are a little less than the master, because they have a little chink in their armor which says, I didn't get to play when I was a kid. I didn't get to do this, you know. And the true master does not ever remember not being able to do anything. He did everything he wanted to do. And what he wanted to do was to bring forth that genius that was within him. He wanted to release that diva, or whatever a boy is called, or a girl, but he wanted to release the magic of the writing, of the dancing, of the singing, of whatever he wanted to do. Now, when does it happen? Now. When does it happen? Now. When the girl is dancing, and all of a sudden, she's not dancing anymore. She is the dance. She hears the music in her head. She hears the movements, and she sees in her mind the other participants in her dance step. And she moves with such grace and such elegance and such charm. And someone might come in the room at that moment and see it, and they say, oh, wow, I mean, no music or anything else, and look at her dance. Well, she's got the music in her head. She's got the allness of it in her, and she doesn't see that person standing there looking at her. And that person can applaud until their hands are bloody red. And she won't even hear that because she is in the dance. She is the dance. Michelangelo, in sculpting David out of the rejected piece of marble, didn't see the rejected piece of marble. He didn't see anything else but the captured figure within that marble that he released. And he released it not as, he might say, next comes the finger and so forth and the nose and what have you. He released it as his chisel just sort of moved in a graceful manner to only touch it perfectly. Do you think, speaking of sculpture like that, that perhaps our diamond smiths, the men who cut diamonds, are not absolutely great? I mean, here they have in their hands something that could be worth a great deal of money. And if they make a wrong puck with their little pick, with their little chisel, whatever they do to work on these things, boom, dust. It's diamond dust now. and that's how they get the diamond dust. But there are very few beautiful diamonds. And now, the mind of man again has come forth with the mind of God being the mind of man, and they have found a way to make silicon, or whatever it is they're making it from, they make from silicon a diamond more perfect than any diamond that ever existed. More perfect. Because they have complete control over it. It has no fracture points in it. It has no area where it might lose itself. And they have the ability to put fire into the diamond, into the false diamond. The real diamond that has fire in it has some very special essence to it. I'm not familiar with the terms that might be used for it, but the fire is the term that they do use. Now, the manufactured diamond can have that too. That's another very special process. But can you see? Now, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Pretty soon everybody should have these manufactured diamonds, and you can't tell them from the real. Because you have to look for the flaw in the real diamond to tell that it's not a manufactured diamond. And you watch. They'll put flaws in the manufactured diamond, so they will look like the real, even to the ultimate. You see, when you're working in the here and the now, with the genius of your magic self, and you don't try to do something to perform something, all you try to do is to bring forth the magic. Now, did somebody say to David, or somebody say to Michelangelo, Mike, I want a statue called David, and I want it to do this, that, and the other thing. And so Mike says, okay, I got a piece of marble over here, I'll chip it out for you. No. He didn't know what was in that statue. He didn't know what was in that marble. And what was in that marble became revealed to him as his genius sort of melted over the piece of stone, just letting it fall apart. I'd imagine if we could see the chips that came from the statue of David as it was being done, or the Pietà, or any of these other beautiful things that he's done, we would see wonders. And then we mustn't forget another aspect. He was also a great painter.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a great metaphysician. And he was a great writer. He wrote well. He wrote on theology. And, the guy who paints the Sistine Chapel with the entire Bible story up there has got to have something going on inside of his mind, really a wisdom. Well, his immortality is not in those things. His immortality lives on in him. Because he is just doing, and you too. Now, the girl who is the diva, who is dancing and listening to the music within her and doing this marvelous dance, and someone comes in and watches her, the girl doesn't know that. She has no idea that person's there. She might be looking straight at that person, but she doesn't see that person because she's somewhere else. She's in the dance. Mm-hmm. Now, she is in that dance internally. She is in that dance eternally. That's her immortality. That's your immortality. Whatever takes your heart, your life, your hand, your dream, your goal, your essence, and shines forth as it. No one need know it. No one need ever know what your immortality is. And of the billions of people on the face of the earth, very few are known for their immortality. And those who are known for their immortality, it is not their immortality. Because Michelangelo was not immortal because of those things he did. He was immortal because of who he is. You see, and that's the thing to remember. You are immortal. You are living in the now because of who you are right now. Who is your is? What is your is? Who are you? What immortality, what ultimate essence have you revealed of yourself, except who you are right now, and what you are right now, and where you're going right now? Fantastic, you know? Have you thought about that? Have you thought about that? Or have you thought about, well, I got to make a name for myself, I got to write a book, I've got to lecture before these people, I got to go and clean this house like it's never been cleaned before, so that people look at this house and say, my, she did a good job, or he did a good job, or, you know, whatever. And again, like I tell Rhonda, Joyce, I say, Rhonda, don't clean the house for them. Clean it for yourself. When you're done with that house, it is something that makes you happy. And you get up on top of the ladder and clean on the top of the shelves and on the top of the cabinets and so forth. Not because anyone ever is going to look up there, but because you know it's there. We have a large television monitor here that we use. It's 60 inches, and it's a pretty good sized monitor. Well, it stopped working properly, and we had a repairman come out and look at it, and he took the back off, and he says, of course it's not working right. He says, you have a very good area that you keep it, it's dust-free, so forth, but after all these years, 6 years now, dust has gotten on top of your red, white, and blue things that shine up your light. And now, he said, watch. And he took his hand, and he rubbed it on the inside of that lens, and took off the dust layer, and instantly the picture was there. And then he said, do you want this clean before I leave? And we said, yes, please do. And what? Why didn't it work? Dust. Dust! No more than dust on the lens of the camera inside of the monitor there, you know. Just dust. Now, I opened up the side of my G4 Apple computer, and I laid it down, and I thought to myself, And then I did the unthinkable thing. I blew at it. And out came dust. Oh, my goodness sakes. I didn't ever think there was that much dust around. And I blew the inside, and I blew the outside. I thought, I should get out the vacuum cleaner. But I blew and blew and blew. And dust came out. And I kept wiping it up and wiping it up and wiping it up. And then finally, after it was all done, then it was still a layer of dust in there. And I took this cloth, and I went off on every surface and wiped it all nice and clean and made it all as clean as could be. Especially the fans and the vents, you know. And I blew in the fans and the vents. And I then the outside where the fan comes out and so forth in the vents. And then, before I closed the case, I used my immortal, eternal wisdom. I want you to realize how important this is. I used my immortal, eternal wisdom, my brilliance of the divine in me, and I pressed the little reset button. Because if you don't press that reset button after you fool around like I did there, it surely unset itself. And so then, now when I plug it in, it will function perfectly. But if I don't, I think, why doesn't that function? Why doesn't it function? Well, that little reset button has to be reset. But when I got done blowing and poofing and wiping and cleaning, that was amazing. I never dreamed there was so much dust in there, and it was just really fantastic. Really fantastic. So, you see, our immortality, each one of us, our immortality is covered by a layer of dust. And that layer of dust is our lack of vision. Our lack of vision of how great we are, how wonderful we are living in the now, and how no matter what it is we choose to put our attention to, we have the answer for it. We have the information. We have the knowledge that it requires to do it right now. No matter what it is, we are immortal. My immortality is the life I live now. Follow that, live that, know that, believe that, enjoy that. And man, oh man, what a blessing you will be to yourself to let go and let the divine in you fly right now. Fun. My immortality is the life I live now. I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.